Hello and welcome to the podcast on negotiation. Today with a super special guest, with Linda Swindling. Linda, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Linda is one of those amazing people who I had a pleasure to meet a couple of months ago. And ever since I met her, the number of questions I had to answer has just doubled. And Linda is also an author of a book called Ask Outrageously, and this is the main topic of our today's podcast. We'll be talking about asking questions, the psychology behind it, not philosophy, although we could also talk about the philosophy of asking questions, but we're going to focus on psychology behind it. We're going to talk about what types of questions we could potentially ask, and especially in connection with different phases of negotiation. So Linda is a prolific writer. She is an engaging speaker. There you go. That's the books. That's all the books. I strongly recommend going to Linda's website, which is
lindaswindling.com or askoutrageously.com. Either one will get you there.
That's easy enough. And you have a look at Linda's background, Linda's work, and there you guys will find a lot of free resources, and we'll be talking about them as we go, as we move along through our today's podcast. Linda.
Yes.
You had an amazing career. You are a lawyer by education.
Right.
And at some point you decided to focus on leadership and negotiation.
Right.
Was there a particular event, a particular aha moment that has brought you to that decision, or how did it happen?
Well, that's such a great decision, because I know some of your viewers are students or kind of going through, do I really want to do this career? And the good news is you don't have to do what you studied, and you don't have to force yourself to be miserable just because you have that career, and you're, even if you're good at it. What happened for me was, in the middle of trying a 4-year case, I had a client that the case went on for 4 years. I also had a child, and I went to a conference, and I had seen a television show on business coaches. And I hadn't even heard of that. I'd never heard of an executive coach or a business coach. And all of a sudden I said, I think that's what I need. You know, what could I do to talk to somebody? And sure enough, I found one at a conference. I heard her speak and I went, I'd like to hire her. And so as we were working together, the first year we worked together, she said, well, we've tripled your practice, because a lot of my cases had gone away when I was pregnant. We had the baby and took care of the baby. And then she said, you're spending more time with friends and family, which you said is really important, but you still don't seem happy. And as we were talking, she said, so what does make you happy? And as I started telling her, you know, I like talking to managers, and I like leaders, and telling them how to avoid employment lawsuits. And she said, well, you could just do that. You could just talk about negotiations and leadership. And I had never heard of such a thing. You know, you knew the big motivational speakers, but other than that, I had never heard of that career. And so I started transitioning, and that ended up being a great, you know, opportunity. It took me a little bit, and it might take you a little bit if that's something you're looking at, but you can negotiate your life too, in addition to everything else we talk about in negotiations.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And now you're a professor of practice and in negotiation and dispute resolution at the University of Texas at Dallas.
Yeah, and I never dreamed about that either. Somebody had been following my LinkedIn post and reached out and said, and her name is Maria, Dr. Maria Hazenthalter. And she said, do you know anybody in your environment, in your neighbors, you know, in your peer group? And I said, well, Dr. Maria, I will ask. And so as I started asking my friends, I said, yeah, we know somebody who does a lot of volunteer work, has taught at the college level, you know, gone in and taught classes, and does all of these things for negotiations and students. And I said, great. They said, we know you. But again, be open. And that would probably be the biggest lesson I would say in negotiation and in asking, is just be open. Be open to suggestions that you didn't even know. But Dr. Hazenthalter, I keep saying your name right, Hazenthalter, said, you know, would you be interested in doing this?
Serendipity.
Yeah, amazing.
All right. So today we're going to focus on questions and asking questions in negotiation. And I think you practice what you preach. And I'd like to feature the book that you wrote right behind you called Ask Outrageously. Yeah. What brought you to the idea of writing the book about asking questions? Was that your nature or was that your interest?
You know, my nature is to ask questions. I've always questioned everything. And I was a broadcast journalism major before law
school. Ah, okay.
So, yeah, I live in the question, right? And in mediation, that was the big thing. But I hadn't planned on writing that book. I wrote, I actually applied for a TEDx talk. And I said, the world needs you to ask outrageously. And guess what? They said, no, we do not need that TEDx talk. And so I said, okay. But then the next year, they said, if you'll come to an audition, we want you to do that talk and see if you can, you know, get through our audition process. And so sure enough, I auditioned did a competition and I was chosen they had three different open competitions that they had like 10 people at each. And as I was waiting, knowing that I was going to do my big TEDx talk for the SMU, I said, well, we should do some research, you know, and then as we started doing that, we should write a book. And then that's how it came about. But Ask Outrageously is what I encouraged a lot of my people in my training or my speaking programs to do.
And why? What's the reason behind this recommendation? Well, it's not even a recommendation, it's an imperative, right? What's the reason behind this imperative? Why should we ask questions? Why should we ask them outrageously? And what does outrageously mean?
What a great question. The first thing is, I got fed up. If you want to know the truth, sometimes your best ideas come when you get fed up. And I was trying to get some sales professionals that were high level and selling a very big ticket item to just ask questions. And they said, oh no, this is not this area. And it kind of snobby. And I said, well, I want you to go over to that mall with $20 and go see what you can get. And then as we perfected it, it got less than, you know, it was free. Go see what you can get for free or with this paperclip or whatever, you know, I'd give them nothing. And what we found was the same people that learned how to ask personally could ask professionally. And once you got over that fear of just asking, just and getting ready to hear no, but just asking, it was shocking the results that you could get. And, you know, during that first little thing, somebody came back to our group. We had five groups. One came back with a buy one, get one free that he paid $20 for. The group would pay $20. One group went and had beer. They said, we were, you know, getting to know each other with this $20. I said, that bought you two beers at this hotel. One group came back with maybe $30. It wasn't much. And they had put in money of their own. Two groups came back with well over $100. And the reason why was they just played the game. They just went and asked. And if they heard no, they asked somebody else. And that was kind of the aha moment was we're just not asking. We're just not living in the question.
That's amazing. It's just enough to, but why do people not ask? Yeah? What are the barriers? What are the obstacles? Are they purely psychological or are we simply not used to asking? Are there any social norms that prevent us from, or probably all of the above, I guess.
Well, there's four big reasons. Mm-hmm. One is they're afraid they're going to disturb somebody, bother them.
Well, one which is empathy, right?
Yeah.
Empathy,
well, right. They just don't want to bother them. You know, they wouldn't talk to someone like me, whatever that is.
Ah, okay.
One is they're, you know, oh, I might not use the right words. I might not say it correctly, which leads us to the third one, which is they don't want to be embarrassed, right? They don't want to be seen in a bad light or, oh, you're asking for help. You should know that, whatever. The fourth one, though, is they're worried about hearing the word what? No.
No.
People are worried about hearing no. So would you like me to help your listeners and you get over hearing the word no? Would that be helpful?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's bulletproof all of you. Okay, so if you are not driving or riding a bike or doing something that's moving, Close your eyes. Let me do it too. You ready?
Okay. I am.
Listen to these words. No, you can't have it. No, that's ridiculous. No. Are you kidding me? No. You now open your eyes.
Mm-mm.
Open your eyes. Pat yourself on the back for hearing it. Did you survive? Of course you did, right? And here's the thing. If you're not hearing no, you're not asking for enough. So let me say it again. If you're not hearing no, you're not asking for enough. And if you don't risk hearing that no, you'll never know. Because
that's pretty smart.
You have to ask to hear what's possible. You've read part of my book. You know what I didn't ask for, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was at a television show, and I don't know how many of you have ever been at a taping of a television show or something. And it was in the U.S., it was called The Tonight Show, and Jay Leno walked out. And Jay asked for questions from the crowd, and my hand went up first. And he said, yes, you, ma'am. And instead of asking him for what I really wanted, I did the safe question, the like me question, hoping I could slide in for what I really wanted later. A lot of us do this. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jay, what's tough about your job? And as he starts saying, well, not much. You know, I meet rich people. I, you know, I get to do this. I love it. And I drive fancy cars. And before I could slide in for what I really wanted to ask him, what happened? He went and looked somebody else and goes, yes, you, ma'am. And so I just sat down. I went, I blew my chance. And she stood up. And what'd she do?
Ask your question.
Ask for exactly what I wanted. And she said, Jay, can I have a picture with you? And he said, sure, come on down. And as she's coming down, I'm just thinking, I blew it. And he looks back at my face and he says, that's what you wanted too. And I start to stand up and he goes, she asked. And I went, and so she got the picture, made a joke. I mean, he was making jokes, which is what he's supposed to do. And it wasn't a big deal to anybody but me. We got a big group picture later. It wasn't a big deal to anybody but me. And that's the thing. Your outrageous request may not be outrageous. It's just outside your comfort zone. And what's important to you may not be important to anyone else. And that's the key. Because, and you know that I've done some research around this book. We did almost 1,200 people responded to these questions. And a third of them said, I wanted something big to me, important to me. I didn't ask for it. And it went to someone else, meaning it was available. They, and what's the worst is, you know, if you've had a client and you said, oh, I wish we could have worked together. And they go, I wish we could have. Or there was a opportunity to study abroad, or maybe an opportunity to work on a project, or go to a dance with somebody you liked, right? But we didn't ask. And then later they say, the worst thing is, I would have loved to have done that. I would have loved to have hired you or give you the business or go to the dance, but you didn't ask.
You didn't ask.
Yeah. And that's what's hard. So there's a couple of things. One is just be aware of what's going on, right? But the other is negotiate has the word go in it. Go do it. Go ask some questions. Because negotiation's all about asking questions. Ask.
It is indeed. And that's exactly what I wanted to switch our attention to, or focus on our attention on. And that is everything you described is strictly applicable also in the context of negotiation, because ultimately, in addition to the aspect of problem solving, there is the aspect of or value creation, there is the aspect of value claiming. Yes. And there are different questions, right? I mean, open-ended, right. Close-ended, reflective, whatever, leading, and so on. And I think the many of my students and executives that I have in my had in my workshops, they struggle with types of questions to be asked at the right moment.
Yeah? Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Linda, would you have any advice that you could share with us in terms of what type of questions shall we ask when?
That's a super question. I've got a real easy word for you to remember for asking questions. And that word is ask. So when you're in a question, it usually, when you're in a situation, you usually need to be aware of something. What am I aware of? You know, I'm aware that this person's yelling at me. Well, what else am I aware of? So sometimes you're asking yourself, I'm aware that the air conditioning's blowing on me. I'm aware there's a problem. What am I aware of? And then number two is the S and ask, and that's seek. What information do I need to seek? And then K, you do not need to, it stands for no, but you don't have to know the whole blueprint. All you have to know is what's your next best step or your next best question. So you had said something about open-ended questions. Well, there are a lot of people, and you and I know them, that are experts on, you know, drafting the perfect question. But when I get stressed or when I get an opportunity or when I'm surprised, I can't always think of those questions. So first off, I remember ask, okay, is this something I need to be more aware of? Do I need more information? Do I need to seek or do I need to know just the next steps? That's my first thing. And then just live in the what and the how questions. All you have to put in front of any question you've got is a what or a how to make it open-ended. And if you ask a what or how question, it gives you a moment to breathe. It gives you a moment to listen to what they're saying so you can do a follow-up. So, you know, simply, do you want ice cream? Okay, well, that's a closed-ended, yes or no. But if you said, what ice cream would you like? Oh, all of a sudden they're saying, is there an opportunity for ice cream? Or how would you like dessert? Would you like, you know, what kind of thing? And all of a sudden they're talking and you can go, okay, I'm catching my breath. I'm listening for what they want to talk about. And, you know, close questions have their place. If somebody's been rambling, if somebody needs to come to you know, there's a decision point, you can say, so do you want chocolate or vanilla ice cream, right? And they will answer you, or they'll say, no, I'm strawberry this time. Great, terrific. And most of the time when you're negotiating and you want to explore, you know, you want to ask, you know, those probing what and how questions, because you don't want them to shut down. You think of a closed question. I often think of it like a leading question.
Right.
You know, and you'll say, isn't it true, witness, that you did this, that you walked that dog at midnight? Isn't that true? And they say, well, let me tell you, no, answer that question, yes or no. You know, judge, instruct this person to answer that question. Well, no. And I'm a recovering attorney. I don't practice anymore. So I don't like those. I want open-ended questions that are more probing and listening for what I don't know. So you can do that, or you can think about getting them into an imagination kind of state, which is, you know, imagine the perfect scenario here. This deal goes absolutely the way you want it to. What'd you be seeing that you know would prove to you that that deal worked? Great. So people would be smiling. They'd be shaking hands. You'd see some money. That's perfect. Okay. What would you be hearing? What do you mean? Well, good job. I'm glad we did business together. I can't wait for our next deal. Okay, great. How would you be feeling? So those are what and hows. How would you be feeling? Oh, relieved, confident. I could do the next thing. Feeling better about the deal. Terrific. So those are more of those kind of questions that are probing, but it explores some possibilities. So those are usually, you know, between the closed and leading and probing and open, those are things. There is something else that you had asked me about before, which was reflective. And often when I hear that, I'm trying to repeat as much as possible their words. So one of the clients I worked with, I said a word that was not their word. I said, so what I'm hearing you talk about is transformational change here. And they all went, yeah. I said, okay, I said that word twice and you all have given me reaction. Tell me what I'm saying that's not right. Because you've told me you want the change to make a difference. I said, yeah, we want it to make a difference. But in our world, transformation means there's going to be layoffs. When we say I said, yeah, let's not use that word. So if they use a word, then you say, so I understand, you know, what you just, or let's make sure that I'm on the right track, or let's make sure that I heard what you're saying. You're saying you want change that makes a difference. Can you talk more about that? So that's another one that, and can you give me more information? And where have you seen that? What's, you know, what kind of frustration was that? And so you can use their exact word often with a what, a how, or can you tell me more?
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So we see that different types of questions make are more appropriate for different stages in negotiation or different negotiation situations. You encourage with the title of your book and in the book itself, you encourage people to ask outrageously.
Yes.
And I would like us to focus on this a little bit, especially on the difference between, on sensing the threshold of asking outrageously. So okay. What does it mean exactly, and how outrageous can we be without becoming annoying?
Or obnoxious.
Or obnoxious.
Right. So one of the things that we do is we stop ourselves. We already imagine that someone's going to respond like we would, or why would they ever give me this opportunity? So when we're saying asking outside your comfort zone, we're not talking about asking outside the boundaries of what is socially okay. We're talking about pushing a little bit more, asking for a little more responsibility, asking to not take on that responsibility right now. So when you're asking outrageously, for you, it might be outrageous. For me, I should have asked for that picture. That was outrageous up front, but I didn't. So it's something that you know you want, remember that subtitle is the secret to getting what you really want, not settling. Uh-huh. So if you want to lead the team, do not ask for the job underneath the team leader. Ask for the team lead job.
Yes.
And if someone says no, you ask them a question. I heard you say no. That's very polite. A third of the people will turn you down if you're not polite. So be polite. I heard you say no. Can you walk me through your decision? And they are going to say something in that, because that was outside your threshold. You don't feel comfortable. Oh no, they said no. Most of us will slink away. I can't believe I asked that, whatever it is, right? But no, you're going to say, I heard you say no. Can you tell me about that? And all of a sudden you're going to K-N-O-W something. You're either going to know that opportunity is going to go away. Yeah, we're eliminating that position. That's not even going to be there. Two, they're going to say something and you now can understand that they don't know something. So that's what happened with one of the people I was working with. She said, well, I did ask for that position. And I said, oh no. And she said, yeah. And, I was told no twice. And I said, wow. And I said, what was the reason? Well, it's because I'm a woman. And I was sitting there as the trainer that they had brought in to help them with this program. And I said, well, really? You know, that's what your boss said to you, which here it would be like terrible employment law problems to say
exactly.
That, right? In many countries. And she said, well, no, that's not what he said, but I know that. And I said, okay, well, I don't want you to ask if you can have the position again. You've already been turned down twice. Just go back and say, I was just making sure I was clear. What were the good reasons I didn't get? Not why. What were the good reasons I did not get the position? He goes, oh my gosh, her boss said, I would love to give you that position. You don't have the right classification and licensing that we need you to have. And she started laughing. And he said, what's up? And she said, well, the military designates these different levels differently. Have you not seen the translation chart that goes back and forth? And he's like, no. And she said, I not only have this one and the one above it, I've got one above that. And he said, I didn't know. So when you're asking outrageously, stop saying, oh, nobody would ever give this to me. Oh, this is why this didn't happen. Ask. And then if they do say no, ask them why. And, you know, there's lots of good reasons. Why do you think people tell you no, Remy? What do you think are the good reasons people tell you no?
There are many reasons, probably, you know, because they might disagree with my opinion. They might have alternative use for their assets. They might be afraid of of the true of giving me the true answer. I don't know. There are probably hundreds of reasons.
There's loads of reasons. And the top three that most of us think they are is they needed more information. You know, I just needed some more information. I didn't time it right, wrong timing, or they don't have the budget. They just don't have the money. If they had the budget, they would do it. And so over and over and over again, those are the top reasons out of all the people we ask. You know, why do people tell you no? Would you like to know the real reasons?
Absolutely.
The top two reasons that real people tell us no, not in our fantasy world about, you know, where we're stopping, is they can't do it. It's an inappropriate request, meaning, you know, you go to the supermarket and you ask them to sell you a muffler. They may want to. You might ask them nicely. You might ask, you know, here among the bread aisle, it looks about the size of a muffler. And they would say, we don't have it to give to you. It's just this. We don't do
impossible.
This. Or they don't like or respect you yet. They don't like or trust or respect you yet. And those are the main two reasons why people will tell us no. If they have it. And those are things you can fix. You know, you can show with little things that you do that you're trustworthy. You can honor their timing. You can honor giving them what they ask for. But it's so interesting. We get so wrapped around the axle on, I've got to have the perfect brochure or the perfect, you know, deck, perfect slides to show them in this request. And a lot of times we just need to make sure that A, they could grant it. They had the authority to do it, right? Or it's even available. And B, you know, have I built respect, trust with them? Why? Because a lot of people just give it to you without any of that. But if they say no, how could I work with that?
That sounds convincing. So we know what it means to ask, let's say, what are the limits of asking outrageously? But the answer is we only find out once we've crossed it, right?
Yeah. You do. And you can practice. And it's so funny. You can ask your friends, you know, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. I'll say, oh, yeah. You know, Remy did that last week. And it was no problem. Or they'll say, oh, let me help you on that one. Why don't you phrase it this way? Now, don't stop yourself if a friend says, I would never ask that. Well, that's not what you're asking them for. You're asking them for, and it helps if you know someone who reminds you of them. Have you ever done that where you say your personality is very similar, you know, very similar. And, you know, there's different styles. Some people are very decisive and some people are more engaging and some people are more accommodating. I want to hear about how it's going to affect people. And some people are by the facts. Give me the facts, the numbers, give me some time to look at it. So if you can kind of identify, and you know the person, it's harder when you're online and you haven't met them and you're doing it through email, but even their language will show you. If you can kind of figure out, you know, you kind of remind me, Remy, of somebody that's like this, would you practice with me? And would this sound more important or, you know, more credible, or would this sound, and people will do that for you.
That's a good advice. That's a good advice. And I think this is the right moment to share the first link to the resources Linda has kindly offered to our viewers and listeners. And I am going to share it here in the chat. For those of you guys who are listening to us, it will be added as a comment in the description. It's a link a quiz which you guys can take to find out whether you are already asking outrageously.
That where do you kind of stop yourself will also kind of, you know, is it when somebody is ranked higher than you are in a job or you perceive that? So that's a great quiz. You know what else might help them now is the deal styles.
Deal styles. I'll also add this.
What kind of deal? What's my deal? How do I like to negotiate? And how do they like to negotiate? That might help you all too, because, and did you hear, I almost said y'all, which is very Texan. I'm from Dallas, Texas. So, but yeah, are they more, they want the bullet points, or do they need to form a relationship with you first? Mm-hmm. And that might help you as well.
All right. So guys, have a look at it. Click on the links. Have a look at the description of the podcast and go to Linda's website where you guys will find also more resources, not only on this book, but also on other books. Moving on to our further questions. So what are the pitfalls? The things that we need to watch for while asking questions in negotiation? I'm sure there are many.
So many. And, you know, it's just like having a conversation. Have you been with that person that just talks and talks and talks, never takes a breath, never asks? Mm-hmm. If you can at all ask those open-ended questions like we were talking about, take a pause. Ask them some follow-up questions because probably their initial answer isn't the real one. They're still thinking through, or maybe they don't trust you yet, you know, but if you can be generous and you're listening and say, can you tell me more about that? Or, wow, I hadn't thought of this. What else? If you remember that there is another person and that all the information you're shoving at them right now and in your request, they haven't even thought about it yet. This is the first time they're thinking about it. So the raise or the promotion or the opportunity with the sale, you've been thinking about this for 2 months. They've had it for 2 minutes. So they may need a little pondering time, or they may need a few more questions. So that's a big one. The other, and I think you've seen this, is people don't stay open. We get so, it's kind of like me in law school, you know, and well, I'm a lawyer now. I'm going to be a lawyer forever. And never in my wildest dreams did I feel like, you know, well, this could translate into maybe a different kind of a career or later become a professor. It didn't even cross my mind till someone else said, well, you know, there's something else. And we need to stay open, because just because we have a solution, it doesn't mean it's the right one. So stay open to what they're saying and say, can you tell me more? Yeah. Because they may see a much bigger, you know, solution for you or opportunity for you that you never dreamed of. I talked to somebody, the past client, yesterday, and he asked me to come and speak to his boss about doing a negotiation program. And he said, a lot of what you're talking about is very much what we need. And I said, okay. So I went in with the mindset, I'm going to talk about this 1.5 hour program. And as we were talking, my former client, Brandon, he said, well, Linda, tell them about this other stuff that you do. And I said, oh, is that of interest? So instead of talking, showing up and throwing up on the poor guy, I started asking him what his real needs were. And at the end of it, we had a 6-month program that would really serve him. And there was only one thing I had to say no to that I couldn't do. And I would continue to do that. Auditing and profit and loss statements, making sure they comply with different kinds of regulations. That's not going to be in my you know, skill set. But I would have walked out on what ended up being 3 years of business if I hadn't had an advocate say, hey, pause and listen. But I hadn't asked those questions. So stay open.
Stay open. Probably the biggest mistake that I can think of in terms of asking questions is not asking them. Not asking enough. Yeah. Or asking in a... Because you mentioned that two reasons that people get a no is because what we're asking for is not available, and because the responder doesn't like us. Right? Mm-hmm. So I guess not asking or asking in an appropriate way might be the two biggest mistakes. And staying open obviously keeps us aware, aware of what to ask about.
Right. And the thing is, you can soften that not knowing. You can say, I don't quite know how to say this, or I don't quite know the question, or I'm leaning towards something. Is it okay if I just check it? Now that's a closed. Is it okay if I just check, yes or no? All right, here's what I'm thinking. And you put that out there, or I'm not quite sure what the words are. You know, and you that's a problem, because again, we get to that no, and we want to know every single thing we should say and phrase it exactly perfectly. Why? Because you're phrasing the perfect question for a situation that may not be there. So live in that question. I'm tending to lean towards that. Is that correct? Are we going in the right way, or what else should we consider? Oh, no, we don't. We've already got that going on. What we were thinking about for you and your new role is, and they'll tell you, but they don't know that you don't know if you don't risk talking to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you seen that in your negotiations with people that they just don't even bring up a subject that you know they should bring up?
Oh yeah, we assume instead of asking. Yes, that's one of the most common diseases in negotiation. Exactly. We simply tend to know the truth, or at least believe that we do, instead of simply verifying the assumptions or realizing that what we know are purely assumptions. And they need to be tested. They need to be verified. They need to be falsified or confirmed. Yes. So absolutely. And what can be done, Linda? It sounds to me like asking questions is a skill, consequence of which would be that it's learnable, right?
Yeah,
but how?
Absolutely.
What can we do? How can we learn to ask outrageously the right questions at the right time?
Practice all the time. So you gave them the link for how well do I ask?
Yes.
That's one thing. See where it is that you might be tripping yourself up. There might be two or three places and you say, I don't ask as much on behalf of myself. I'm great if I'm advocating and asking on behalf of someone else. And that makes you about, most of us, 65% of us would much rather ask on behalf of a child or a client or someone who's disabled, whatever it is, right? We would much rather ask for someone else. That said, one thing to keep in mind is if I don't ask this question, who will? And sometimes you need to be the model of, you think of someone newer to the career, they may need to see you ask a question so they feel comfortable asking questions, even if you're told no. The other thing is we are so silly on waiting. We wait to ask the question when it's something really important. No, start practicing everywhere. Do you have, we call them either garage sales or yard sales, where you're selling something that's in your house that no longer needs to be in your house? Yes. Mm-hmm. What do you call them?
Garage sales, yard sales. Okay. We have flea markets here in Germany. Yeah.
All of those places, we have flea markets too. Those are perfect places to go practice. Go practice on strangers. Say, I see you have however many marks or $5 or euros or whatever it is, right? I see it's this. Would you take this? And if they say no, that's fine. You didn't need that thing anyway. But just see how it feels. Or may I speak to your leader, your manager? And you'll see, and you're in a store and all those heads will go... and you say, may I speak to the manager? So the manager walks up and she says, yes, may I help you? And you say, I just want to tell you, Remy was probably the best person I've ever had help me in a store. He not only did he answer my question, he walked me over to where it was, but start asking now on everyday things, because it feels the same. You've done a lot of negotiations, Remy. I mean, it's the small things, and especially the personal things, feel as the same energy, the same emotional, oh, my stomach gets tight or my heart beats or whatever emotion it is, where it lands in your body, you go, oh yeah, that feels the same way as when you're trying to close a multimillion dollar deal. It feels the same. It feels the same. And you need to know, I can get through this. I can survive feeling like I don't know what's going on, or feeling like they might say, no, I've survived it. So that's the big one. Don't wait to get those feelings and practice everywhere. At the store, do you think I should get this cereal or that cereal? Or do you think this fruit looks better or this one? Ask strangers, practice on people you will never see again. Why not? And when I do garage sales, I go to different neighborhoods. I don't stay around here where I live. I go somewhere else. We're so afraid of being embarrassed or not being proper. That's silly. Just go ask. Be polite, but go ask.
That makes a lot of sense. So guys, go and ask outrageously. I was wondering, as I was listening to your answers, insightful answers, I was wondering about asking questions that increase the probability of hearing the truth.
Yes. Okay.
So is there something that you could maybe share in terms of the form of questions that increase the probability that we will hear actually what not what we want to hear or what we don't want to hear, but the truth?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that will tell you what they think you want to hear. Mm-hmm. And what's bad about that, especially if it's an employee or a customer, or someone, a colleague, that information is not going to help you, is it? So that's a great question. So one way to do it is, I need your honest answer. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I would much rather have this information now than be shocked about it later. Mm-hmm. So you want to let them know it's okay. I have no dog in the hunt, is what we say in Texas. I've got no dog in the hunt, meaning there's nothing in this for me to win. Mm-hmm. I don't care what the answer is, but I do need the real answer. Or, and you can say that, or you can say, if you had to tell your closest friend the truth, how would you say it about this? Mm-hmm. So you can actually put it into you're doing me a disservice if you don't tell me the truth, kind of a situation. Right. Do you have a way that you've done it, Remy, that you think?
Sometimes when we don't want to hear a lie, or we don't want to put people in a bad spot, we avoid asking a question in the first place. And I think that has been not only my experience, but probably many people in the audience identify themselves with this answer, right? Sometimes we suspect an answer, but we also have a feeling that that asking the question that induces that answer, let's say, would incline the responder to be dishonest with us. And we deliberately probably avoid asking the question instead of using the technique you've just shared.
Yeah. And you can also say, I understand this won't be a popular question. And I understand if you tell us you can't answer it right now. So I've given them two outs. Unpopular, can't answer it. And it's a question that many of us have asked at break. Mm-hmm. And then you ask your question. And, you know, and you say, so you can ask, you know, I often did that. Professor, I've got you to hear, but I you lost me. And we had actually behind me in law school, I always had to sit the second or third row because it was so boring. There was no visuals or anything, you know, and you'd read it and they're just talking to you. And when I would ask a question, anybody who asked a question or looked like they're showing off got a little mark. Well, I was never showing off. I was showing that I was not very smart at times, you know, is what I felt like. But funny enough, my grade was fine at the end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's okay to ask the dumb question, the question that, you know, may not be all right. You just structure it that way. You say, I understood this. This is where you lost me. Or make a smart ask. Do you know, I tell everybody to be a smart ask, you know, specific, measurable, you know, all the smart goals, right? Is it actionable? Is it something that's relatable to what we're doing? Is it time specific? So when someone does, have you been in a meeting, Remy, where they go, we should now have.
Oh, yeah. It happens to me all the time. Let's do this. We should. And you're like, let's do.
And it has nothing to do with what you're talking about. Have you had that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you say, and so, you know, what a friend of mine calls that is a plop. So Kristen Arnold, my friend, says that's a plop. You just plop down something that has nothing to do with anything, right? And so what I suggest you do is when somebody says, let's do, you know, German Fest, and then you're like, we're in Germany. We, you know, what do we need this for? You say, I almost like they plop something on the table. I heard what you said. What are you saying for us or for a different country or for this class or for international students or what are you saying? Right. How would we know that that was successful? Anybody else want to do this? Great. How does this realistically tie to what we're trying to accomplish here with our honoring our friends in Lima. You know, how is this helping? And then, because I saw that Raphael's from Lima, so we have to include Raphael, right? And then the last one is, by when? So you can always do a smart ask for yourself. You know, this is what I'd like, but you can also ask people. So what are you actually asking us to do? Mm-hmm. Smart it for us.
Yeah, reversing the question. That's a good one. That makes a lot of sense. Linda, let's talk a little bit about breakthrough moments, breakthrough questions from your career, from your negotiation experience. Is there anything that comes to your mind as a sort of this aha moment where everything that you wrote or heard about asking questions outrageously all of a sudden materialized in a great insight, great deal, or whatever else that you remember positively or negatively?
Well, I've told you about a couple. One is I didn't even know there was a career. And the coach saying, well, what would it be like if you could? And that's what it sounds like. What would it be like if every day you could do this? Mm-hmm. Right. Another one is, and what if it were easy? So I know a lot of the people on that listen to you are very hard drivers and they try to accomplish things. And the thing is, we often will come up with our plan and we think you have to follow all these steps. And it could be like I told you with the job at UTD, someone else reached out to me. I didn't even know it was there. I said, well, I had heard you have to do all these things. My first book was published that way. I called to complain to a publisher about them not coming to our town. And I had already been through this big book seminar on how to write a book, and you had to write a book proposal, and you had to do these things, and you had to do this letter. And so I wasn't prepared when the editor said, well, have you ever considered writing a book? And I said, yes, I have done thought about this and this and this and that. Well, at the end of the conversation, he says, you could do that, or I've got a co-author for you. You could write on this topic. You could get this published. But I wasn't thinking about what's easy, you know? So that's another breakthrough question. And if not you, then who? I would say for you all, if it's not you, then who would get this? And what is it? And what's the worst that's going to happen to you? Someone's going to embarrass you or say no, or think something poorly about you. They're going to think something poorly for that much time. And then they're going to go back to thinking about themselves. Honestly, come on. Oh, Remy asked something stupid. Okay, and now on to me again. You know, they don't care. So I would ask, what's the worst that could happen? And wow, what would happen if it was easy and you could do it?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If not you, then who? Yes, if it's not important to you, or if it is important to you, then ask.
Yeah, yes, why not?
In the worst case, you might hear a no, and that's as bad as it goes.
Well, and also now they know you're interested in doing something like that.
Exactly. Right?
So it might be a no this time, but then later they say, when you said that, it got me thinking. And most of the people on this call will know when you said that, I didn't even know you were interested in that. Now that I know, or I was saving something better for you. There's so many times that once you let other people know, then all of a sudden they're looking for you.
Mm-hmm. Guys, remember, yes, even if you get a no, they will remember that you asked. Yeah.
They'll know.
So, so we need to slowly come to an end. Yes. I could keep on asking outrageously. See, you've been my best teacher and your book as well. If you were to have a quick pitch for your book, why should people in our chat, our viewers, our listeners, buy and read Ask Outrageously?
Great. Some people don't think they need it themselves. Now, the ones of you who do, you're already there to buy it. But there's probably about 12% of you that are like, I ask pretty fine. I'm fine. Those of you is who I'm talking to right now. You need it for the other people around you who do not feel comfortable. You do not know why they're not asking. They're reporting to you and they're not asking for things that you think are simple. They're related to you and they should have been asking for a raise. They should have been asking for an opportunity and you keep coaching them and you don't know why they're not asking. So those leaders, there is something in there for you. How do you lead people to make deals? And that's at the back part of every chapter. And it's like, I don't know why they're not doing this. There'll be an explanation there for you. The rest of you know if you need to ask more. But for those leaders, those people that you've always asked and you've been really great at it, you need to know why people aren't doing it, because you don't have the good reasons. It comes easy to you.
That's amazing. So guys, if you have a feeling that your friends, colleagues, family members are not asking enough questions, buy them the book. Teach them how to ask outrageously, because true leaders listen. And to listen, their followers need to, or to be able to listen, their followers need to be able to ask. Yeah? All right. My very last question, Linda, is always the same. Yeah, it's about greatness in negotiation. Yeah, it's about greatness in negotiation. So is there anyone in particular that comes to your mind when you think about great negotiators who ask outrageously?
Yeah, no. I've been blessed to have a lot of people help me that have written all those big books, and it's through National Speakers Association. I think the lawyer that I worked with last, who was my partner, Wendell Withrow, he showed me that you could ask even if they're on opposite sides of you, and that you could be polite in the whole thing. And you didn't have to be a jerk like some of the other attorneys I'd seen. You could just be open. Just be open with them and say, what else do you need from us? And you can always say no. But it's okay to ask to help somebody. And it's okay to ask, you know, what would be helpful to you. I think that's a lesson that I'll always keep.
Thank you so much, Linda. I don't know if you noticed, but we've been listened to and watched from all continents, from Japan in Asia, from Kenya in Africa, from Europe, Germany and the Netherlands, from the US, and of course from Peru and South America. So thank you guys. Thank you guys so much for joining us. It's been amazing to have you with us, Linda. I enjoyed our conversation, and until the next time on the podcast on negotiation, thank you so much.
Go ask. Thanks so much, you all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.